Thank you very much. So first I'm going to let you know that we have no financial relationships to disclose, and I want to thank Priscilla Fox and Barbara Fain, who are up front on the right here, who have worked with me on crisis standards of care in Massachusetts. They're co-authors of this presentation, and hopefully they'll help answer any questions you may have. In terms of setting the scene here, James's wonderful presentation gave you a notion of what we are talking about when we talk about crisis standards of care, and then Ellie sort of jumped to the results they have in Minnesota from their public engagement process. And what I'm going to do is a little mix of what crisis of standards of care means in Massachusetts here, how we've been working on that, our roadmap for doing that, and then pull back. Ellie gave you some results. We're now at the process where we're starting our public engagement. So it might be interesting to other states who are in different places to hear about how we're going about that and what the issues are for us. So first, this first slide walks through we're going to walk through a brief overview of the direction that Massachusetts is taking on crisis standards of care. So this provides the context for the public engagement discussion. So in Massachusetts, the public engagement discussion is emphasizing clinical guidance. We're talking about clinical guidance when we develop crisis standards of care, and not liability. So there's a difference there. And I wanted to make a note on liability. Probably very few people are watching the debate in the New England Journal of Medicine. I think the people who are marinating in this are. But we're using a term, crisis standards of care, which we are being attacked on. The criticism is that the standard of care that you use in medical malpractice cases already incorporates what resources you have at the time and the situation you find yourself in. So the criticism goes, why are you developing crisis standards of care and all you're doing is trying to immunize healthcare providers from liability? And I think this is a big mistake, and critics are conflating the work we're doing on crisis standards of care, which is just preparation to talk about how we allocate resources and make a fair allocation. So I'm going to be using that term, crisis standards of care, throughout this presentation, but I think in Massachusetts, we're going to try to change the term. And if you're thinking to yourself, why is she going on about this term here, it's because it's causing us so much grief. And at the beginning of this, I used to get up and say, oh, the words don't matter so much, the concept does. Whatever we finally agree on, as long as we're talking about the same thing, fine with me. And my last presentation to my lawyer friends was basically what's in a name a whole lot at this point. So I'm going to use crisis standards of care. I hope that this is the last presentation where I do. We're going to try to drop that name and perhaps talk about something like guidelines. So these are the basic, this is what basically crisis standards of care are, the fair allocation of resources. And the basic principles in Massachusetts are to maximize the lives saved and to allocate resources based on the likelihood of survival and the benefit from treatment. And one basic tenet is non-discrimination, that age or disability alone are not considered a clinical risk factor. So central to crisis standards of care is protection of vulnerable populations. I think has been mentioned already, those who face barriers to access on a good day and would be expected to find themselves at the back of the line in a very bad day are the people that we're focusing on. So without crisis standards of care, people with resources, as Ellie says, would find their way to the front of the line. Connections, understanding of how the system works, and financial resources. And we're hoping through crisis standards of care to make a more equitable allocation of resources. And with education and training, hopefully healthcare providers will know and accept the principle of valuing all lives equally. So this is the roadmap for Massachusetts, and I think at this point we think about 15 to 20 states are engaged in this process. I don't know if you think it more. No two states are exactly alike, and in substance, sequence, or process. And the roadmap shows where we've been. Massachusetts started early in 2006, and we proceeded very deliberately here. So we approached this first by developing ethical principles. We worked with a committee of Harvard School of Public Health ethicists and various players in public health and healthcare in the Commonwealth. And then we developed some basic ethical principles and a framework for working on crisis standards of care. Then we drafted the actual guidelines, the clinical guidelines. We had a second advisory committee that was broad and very clinically oriented. So pediatricians, emergency medical physicians, cardiologists, pulmonologists, et cetera. And now we are engaging in a stakeholder and public engagement on these draft guidelines. We felt we had to know what we were talking about before we went out and brought this broadly to the public to get input. So I'm going to move on to the next slide. So what we're doing, the overarching purpose of the public engagement process is to elicit community values and priorities. So our guidelines have to be in sync with those values and priorities. And our intention is to use the comment and the reaction, as you've heard Ellie, they've done in Minnesota, to inform the final version of the guidelines. And as well as after we have our guidelines in the shape we want them in, not to say they won't be continually evolving, but I think that this feedback will really help us with the continuing education and engagement we're going to have to do after we have these guidelines. So step one in stakeholder engagement, we met with medical providers. So step one is stakeholder engagement. We had a meeting with medical providers, and also we have been meeting with medical consumers, specifically groups whose needs require particular thought and attention, and some of those are listed here. So as part of step one, the first part, we held a healthcare provider forum last spring with the Massachusetts Medical Society, and Harvard School of Public Health helped us, and we held it at the Medical Society building. We were seeking input on the principles and a clinical framework, not on the clinical guidelines per se. And we got 120 participants, full day. We did a live webcast. We had audience participation with electronic voting on some of our statements and principles beforehand and after, so it was good to compare those. And significant takeaways were they agreed to that a first-come, first-served basis was not the way to go. They agreed with maximization of lives saved. And at this forum and other discussions, we found the feedback that physicians do and will consider age and quality of life in making these decisions. So that was interesting feedback and something we have to think about. And of note, malpractice liability was not raised as a significant concern. So we got some surprises in this forum. So at the same time as we were planning and holding the healthcare provider forum, we held a series of stakeholder meetings, and we are still in the middle of holding those meetings. So we saw some of those groups before. Here's a more complete list. And to prepare, we had also discussions with our secretariat, public health, with other 13 agencies is under a Health and Human Services Secretariat, and we've been working with commissioners for the various agencies that serve these population and advocates to prepare for how to have these initial stakeholder meetings. And we've been learning simply by the task of setting up these meetings. So we're using these meetings to identify issues of concern and identify partners to help us in recruitment efforts for our second step, which will be larger statewide meetings. So the format's going to be informal roundtable discussions with small numbers of advocates and providers. We provide a briefing on crisis standards of care. We don't ask for feedback in these meetings on really the guts, the principles, and the guidelines, but we have a facilitated discussion once they understand what we're talking about the issues. And I think that's a great way to go, because you don't sort of populate the discussion with what you think the issues are. We let the comments come back. So moving on to the next slide with 5 minutes to go. Key takeaway, the meetings have gone well. Communities have appreciated being consulted. The advocates are really helping us recruit participants for public sessions at this point. And some of the difficulties have been keeping the focus on crisis standards of care. These are groups who face a variety of struggles on many fronts, so most of which are much more proximate than what we're talking about. So that's an issue. I can give you one example. We went out as a geographically isolated community. We had one of these roundtable discussions in Cape Cod at a, I think it was an elder center, and we met with the tribes, came over from Nantucket, and other tribes came. And we kept coming back to the logistics of getting off the Cape. So somebody asked, how rich is the discussion of the access issue? And we had to explain, we're really focusing on the healthcare setting, and that there are other parts of emergency planning that are focusing on transportation, et cetera. But I'll tell you, it was amazing that the conversation was, how do we get off the Cape? How do we get to other hospitals? And if you've ever been to Cape Cod, show of hands, anybody? It's there's a small bridge, and people wait hours to get on the Cape and hours to get off. And the residents, who sometimes don't like the tourists all that much, have these phony, fake tunnel passes on their cars, so that people, they like to freak out the tourists who see this on the cars and think there was a tunnel that they missed. So that's how bad it is. So, and so also the issue here is, for these groups, is the issue of the message, that it's very easily twisted into a death panel type discussion, and we have been wrestling with that in Massachusetts. Step two, general public engagement. We will be looking for the same exchange of information. We'll be describing what crisis standards of care are. We want to get input on the specific ethical principles. What is fair? What's right? Why? Also, what should the role of the state be? And we expect to hold these general public forums early next year, February and March. We're planning for one in part of the Commonwealth that is primarily Spanish-speaking, where it will be in Spanish. There will be translators for the people who can't speak Spanish. We will, again, have webcasts, funding permitted, to increase accessibility. And just a word about the planning. Again, we're using a steering committee to help us with program design, and we're relying on them to help us with facilitator recruitment and training. Our local community partners and stakeholder partners will be helping us. Harvard School of Public Health is still in it. They're helping us with some of the metrics and how to collect and evaluate the data. And a very interesting synergy that's arisen, they were at the Mass Medical Society meeting, is with the Harvard Community Ethics Committee. So this is a standing group of 18 general public members convened by the Harvard Medical School to advise the 10 Harvard teaching hospitals on matters of ethics policy. And they are actually devoting about 4 hours, 3-hour meetings to us. And it's wonderful, because we're running by them initial survey questions that we'll ask, and the audience participation and our scenarios. And it's wonderful speaking to them. It's a unique opportunity, which is already impacting our approach. And I believe this is almost the last slide. So we're really making an effort to get wide, diverse participation in the general meetings. We've learned from other states that stipends are a must, so we're budgeting for those. And the methodology, in brief, it builds off other successful public health engagement processes in Minnesota and Seattle. And the survey instrument is basically loosely based, I'm racing, on the Seattle King County engagement process survey. So we're finding also the use of scenarios to be very helpful to focus the issues and to try to keep the discussion on target. And we've contracted with Visual Inc. Hopefully they'll be able to draw as we talk and focus the issues for us. One last slide. Challenges, resources, there are a few models to follow. Funding, the credibility of the process, how do we get the true general public in? And once there, are they willing to talk to us? And can we get the kind of facilitation that will get the issues out in applying the outcomes, trying to collect usable data, and again, to manage the issue? We have had, when we had public engagement on vaccine allocation earlier, we had very vocal local protests. And we had our director of emergency preparedness called fascism, the face of fascism. Her picture was put on the web. And we also had our emergency powers bill defeated by people who were talking about death panels and mandated vaccination and incarceration if they were sick. So. A lot of misinformation out here, so we have to proceed carefully on the message. And thank you very much.
We've got 2.5 minutes.
Oh,
you say
we have
time for one or five questions.
Yes.
I just wanted to say I think what you've done is really great. It seemed like you've done all the right things, and sometimes these seem like they're very slow processes, but the longer you take ahead of time, I think the more solid it will be. And I just wanted to comment about all this death panel talk. I think we in the public health community have to start transforming that debate to put our opponents on the defensive and say, are you against democratic deliberative process?
I was in the last panel with you and I heard you say that. I gotta say, I think that's wonderful, but it's too subtle. It's too subtle. We have to have some snappy three-word soundbite to come back at them. And it may be best done in tiny little snippet scenarios. I don't know, but we're working hard on that. And any advice you have, we will gladly listen to. Thank you.
One more question.
One of my questions was going to be how much public engagement
would people accept it?
Yeah.
I don't know how much we had some experience with H1N1, but nothing's basically out there. But you had a little microcosm because you certainly had the state health department saying what the priorities were. And you also had an interesting example of who followed, who didn't, and what the repercussions were from that, and what people thought were fair or not. And I think you had a good example of how things change from day to day, and you had to keep up with the science, that we found that it was not necessarily the elderly who were at most risk. It might have been the chronically ill who were most challenged. That was also interesting in terms of, I think those of us working on this process were definitely looking at H1N1 with all of this in our minds.
Yeah.